Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Precision Rifle Network podcast. This episode will be brought to you by Arkin Optics. Definitely want to check out Arkin, I believe, wholeheartedly. I'm saying this prior to any kind of deal or business with them, that they are the best value in the precision optics market. You can get any of their scopes for less than $500. It's really good. I don't really know what else to say other than that. I've had pretty much every level and quality and brand of scope out there in my possession at one point or another. And if you are looking to spend minimal money and get the best bang for your buck, honestly, I'm not sure you could do much better than Arkin Optics. So make sure to check them out. And if you buy one, tell them that Joel at Precision Rifle Network sent you. It won't get you anything, but you know, you could tell them nonetheless. So what we're doing today in the episode is just covering a few things, and you might hear some background noise. Again, I'm driving, guys. I'm trying to multitask here, which, you know, multitasking to me means you're doing more than one thing half-assed. I like to focus on one thing and get it done and then move on to the next thing, but I haven't done a podcast for you guys in a while, a few weeks, and I want to make sure I'm getting it done. And so I've got a little bit of windshield time here. Thought I'd bust out another podcast. So wanted to talk about a couple of specific things. First thing is, and hopefully helpful to you, will be my checklist for what I do with my gear and my rifle and all that kind of stuff prior to shooting a match. And it's on my mind just because I am, in fact, going to be shooting a match this weekend. It is a 22 long rifle rimfire match, and it'll be at Twisted Barrel Precision down in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm going to be taking my second oldest son down there with me to shoot this match, and just kind of looking forward to it. So as I was prepping gear and rifles and things like that, I thought, you know, I never really shared my kind of pre-match setup or process or anything like that with you guys. So here we go. First thing I always say to myself in my head, this is just my internal checklist, right, that I'm trying to portray to you guys. And I just say gun, mags, and ammo. And if I have those three, I know the gun will go bang, right? Gun, mags, and ammo, that gun will go boom. At the end of the day, I could run a match with nothing more than that and the knowledge in my head if needs be. Now, you obviously want a lot more creature comforts than that. And so there's more to the list, but I start with gun and the mags and the ammo, and I go from there. And I also have on my list my barricade bags, and so I say bags plural because I've got a game changer bag that pretty much I use the Schmedium with the heavy fill for competitions and or for PRS type competitions, I will say. My gear changes if it's a field style match and I'm wanting to cut weight, but Schmedium game changer heavy fill is my go-to competition barricade bag. So I will take that one. And then I also take a small barricade bag, like a flat type bag, where if I have a really tight spot that I have to fit a rifle through, some cattle gates, for example, are too narrow to use a full-size, mid-size game changer and still be able to get your rifle in there without banging the crap out of your scope on the rail above. Or sometimes you've got like portholes or slots in like railroad ties, sometimes you have to shoot through where the rifle just simply won't fit. And so I take a smaller flat barricade bag that I use in those instances, just so that I've got the hard bottom of the rifle on a soft spot instead of hard against hard. Hopefully that makes sense. I also carry a completely separate rear bag. I know a lot of guys just use their barricade bags as a rear bag. I don't particularly like that. I don't feel like I get as much control. I like to hold my entire rear bag and my rifle stock together in one hand, my offhand, so that I can manipulate the rifle elevation a little bit better with my rear bag. So I carry a separate rear shooting bag. And then I also have a bipod, of course, and just depending on the type of match that I'm going to be running, typically the Atlas Cal gets me everything that I need, though I've been trying to do a better job of learning the MDT SkyPod, the double pole, simply because it's better for field matches and lots of varied positions. So it just kind of depends. It stays in the bag. Whichever one I need to use, I'll use it. But if I'm just going to choose one and it's a PRS style competition, I'm probably taking the Atlas Cow. I know a lot of people would say, no, man, you need that MDT SkyPod. Well, I've just been using the Atlas Cow a lot more. I mean, years now, whereas I'm pretty new to the MDT SkyPod. Maybe a couple years from now, as I've used and gotten used to using the SkyPod, I will then say, nah, it's only the SkyPod. That's the only one I need. But for now, there you have it. I also take my Kestrel, of course, because I need my drop data, my solutions, my solver to figure out all the details for me because I'm not a math guy. And even basic math is sometimes difficult for me, especially if I'm, you know, on the clock or having to do things quickly. So I like that my ballistic solver does all the heavy lifting for me. So there's the Kestrel. I also have binoculars and I use the Sig Kilo 10Ks. So got a 10X binos with a rangefinder built in case I don't particularly trust that the distance is what it is. I can quickly range that for myself and figure out whether that's right or not. I also carry a tripod. Mine is the Really Right Stuff Soar Mark II with Anvil 30 ball head. And I use that for everything, for spotting and for rear support, sometimes if needed on a certain stage, and can use it for all kinds of stuff. That's my go-to. And then I also have a tools bag or a ditty bag that I carry in my backpack with me as well that has, you know, some torque wrenches and small screwdrivers and some various Allen keys that I might need in order to torque things down or tighten things that might come loose during the match or fix something. Maybe I have to change out a trigger. So that little ditty bag does have a backup trigger. I've got backup batteries for my Kestrel and various things like that. You know, pen, pencil, dry erase marker, you know, those sorts of things. I've got painter's tape that I also sometimes just will stick to my Coltec cheat sheet, which is my data solution on the rifle. All those things are in the ditty bag that lives in the rifle. Lives in the bag as well. And so I'm a little distracted because I'm driving and drivers are crazy today for some reason. Doing my best here, guys, to stay focused and give you the podcast, but also drive at the same time. Again, you know, back to the multitasking and doing things half-assed. So here's, that's all the gear. And here's the process then when I'm preparing the rifle and stuff like that before a match. I will, even if I've recently shot it and everything shot fine, I will go back and retorque and tighten all the various screws and bolts all the way around the rifle, like action screws. You know, I'll make sure muzzle brake tight, those sorts of things. I will do scope base and or rails and scope rings and just torque and tighten all of the various things to the specifications that I like, and I will make sure that all those things are squared away before I go to a match. And I do that first because, you know, it could change some things as I torque things down, and so I want to make sure I do that one first. And then after that, I do the scope base and the rings just to make sure that none of that has shifted or changed or whatever. And that could throw your zero off. And so, you know, you want to do that. And then also, I also run a dry patch and or like a boar snake or something down my barrel just a couple of times. Just wipe out any residue or anything like that. I am not looking for a deep cleaning on a 22 long rifle. Now, some people squirm in their seats listening to that. But I'm that guy that. You know, I don't clean nearly as often as, you know, you go and watch an Eric Cortina video and that guy will have you cleaning your life away, literally. I'm not saying that in like a negative way. I'm saying whoever decides to do that, man, make up your mind and do it. And you do you. And I'm totally happy with you doing that. I have no problem. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying I don't choose to do that. I choose to do something different, and I just don't clean as much. So I just run a dry patch or a boar snake down my barrel just to make sure that there's no kind of debris or anything like that sitting in there. And it, you know, it does kind of get rid of a little bit of junk out of the barrel, but definitely doesn't bring it back to perfectly clean. I'm not really sure we can ever get back to perfectly clean, but maybe we can, you know, from where it was when it was new. So I do all that before I ever go out and shoot the rifle again. So now that I've done all those things, I will take the rifle out and make sure that I've got a solid zero. And I zero my 22 long rifles at 50 yards, and I use the SK Match, the red box. And this little gun, it's a Voodoo, and Kenny at Desert Precision Gun Works has spun up a hammer of a barrel for me with his Nevius chamber. And it really works quite well. So I just want to make sure that my zero hasn't changed or shifted or moved, either with, you know, colder weather temperatures. The last time that I shot my 22 in a match, it was over 80 degrees. And now this match this weekend is going to be probably 45 degrees. So there's going to be a difference in the way that that shoots. And I want to make sure that my zero is solid. I want to make sure that that is as dead nuts perfect as I can get it at 50 yards. So I'll spend some time there and just make sure that I've got it, you know, trued up, tuned, whatever. I'm looking for, probably five different five-shot groups that confirm that my zero is right where I think it is. And then after I do that, I will slip my turrets on my scope just to make sure that everything is back to zero. Elevation turret is on the zero mark, and windage turret is on the zero mark, and that it's actually trued up with the actual zero of the rifle, if that makes sense. So I make sure and I slip those turrets back where they're supposed to be. And then after that, I will stretch out the rifle to various distances. If I can, all the way out to the distance that is going to be needed for that match. That can't always happen. Like my property, for example, if I can shoot 22 long rifle stuff, I'm only shooting that out to about 135, 140 yards, something like that, to true up my data. Because it just, I just don't have the distance, right? I could travel to a range, but in order to get, let's say, like this match that I'm going to, I'm being told that probably has out to 300-yard shots. Well, in order to get a 300-yard range around me, I'm traveling a minimum of 45 minutes. If this private range will allow me to come out, and if they won't for whatever reason, then I'm traveling a minimum of 2 hours just to true up the rifle out to that full distance. But I've found, you know, that 150 yards, you know, is definitely within the right zone, speed zone, velocity zone, that I can true up the BC and everything of that 22 long rifle bullet at, you know, 130, 140, 150 yards. And it's going to be pretty dang close if I have to stretch it out past that distance. So I just want to go out as far as I possibly can. And I want to gather that data in, you know, say every 10 to 15 yard increments, just to make sure that everything is lining up the way that I want it lined up. And, you know, again, solid inputs give you solid outputs when it comes to your Kestrel and drop data solutions, and all that kind of stuff. So just want to make sure that all of that is lined up. I just don't want to second guess whether or not my dope is solid at the end of the day. I want to only be able to blame myself. It was my wind call. It was my wobbly position, you know, those sorts of things. I don't want to have to second guess whether my gun is wrong or my scope is wrong or my data was off or any of that kind of stuff. I want to go into a match with the confidence that those things are working as expected, if that makes sense. So all those things have to happen prior to shooting a match. And I try not to do things last minute because I just don't want to induce that stress. Like my mental game works best when I am super calm and not anxious or nervous about anything. And I've found that if I prepare ahead of time, I feel more mentally ready for these matches. And so And I don't really get stressed out on the clock or anything like that. Where I get stressed is ahead of time in the preparation. And if I don't take enough time to prepare sufficiently, then I feel stressed out. And that then transfers over into my match. And that, of course, transfers over into my match scores. And we don't like that, especially if they're in the negative. So that, there you have that. I don't know. I just wanted to throw all that out there. Maybe some part of it helps you, or maybe this is all old news to you guys and you do something very similar. That's fine. I just wanted to give you my process and my steps and see if, you know, anything can be helpful. So there's that. That's number one. Number two thing that I want to talk about is the sponsors. Sorry to spring that on you guys, but you know, MK Machining, and Coltac and Graybo Stocks and just a number of others all help support PRN in one way or another, whether it's through affiliate code, discount codes for you guys. In fact, those three companies, if you use code PRN10, you can get 10% off of anything at Coltac or MK Machining or Graybo Stocks, all that kind of good stuff. You can also navigate to my webpage, to the blog at the bottom of the webpage. And there is a blog article about all of the affiliate links that we currently have deals with. And you can find links to all of those. Some pretty sweet deals on there, especially like Axle Hearing Protection. They always have amazing sales, guys. Sales that you will want to take a part of because they don't do small sales. You'll never see like a 10% off sale at Axle Hearing Protection. They're always like 15, 25, up to 50% off. They do buy one, get one stuff. I think they got going on right now, Axle Hearing Protection. And if you navigate there through my link, then that helps PRN out. So I really appreciate that, you guys. And so that's the second thing I wanted to talk about. Third thing is the Aero Solace. I know I've mentioned this a few times and have yet to do the video on it. And it's kind of old news, but at the same time, it's lingering news because it's been mixed. Like, some people have had amazing results with their Aero Solace barreled actions and chassis and stuff so far, and some people have had poor results or have had issues with their Aero Solace. So you keep hearing it come back up. I personally know some people that will never run an Aero Solace because they've had nothing but troubles with them. I seem to have gotten a good one. And I got mine through Kenny of Desert Precision Gunworks, and he spun up a 6 GT barrel for it for me. So I know the barrel is 100% solid. The action so far seems to be very solid. I have yet to shoot it, but the action functions well and it's smooth. Not like Defiance action smooth or Terminus action smooth or, you know, Impact action smooth. But in terms of an $800 chassis, I feel like it's a pretty nice $800 bolt action, just the action. It's pretty dang nice. And so then it was sitting in a Graybo stock for me that I was given by Graybo. I decided to change that out a little bit just because the stock itself wasn't going to be the right option for a competition type rifle, which is what this Aero Solace is turning out to be. And I found the Aero Solace chassis on Midway USA for a little bit of a discount. So I went ahead and bought that so that I could pair up the Aero Solace action into the Aero Solace chassis and basically have a complete Aero Solace rifle, even though the barrel obviously has been upgraded. I got to tell you about this chassis, guys, because so far the chassis is nicer to me than the action, and the chassis is kind of quickly rising up as a super solid Remington 700 platform precision rifle chassis in my book. It's just got a lot of nice features, so I thought I'd tell you about it. The first thing is the adjustability. You know, length of pull is it does require tools, so it's not tool-less. It does require tools, but it's completely adjustable for length of pull, and of course your cheek height is completely adjustable. Everything can be slightly canted, tipped in or out, whatever you want to do. Lots of adjustability there. Good solid bag rider along the bottom. No really wasted space or anything like that that you could add extra weight back there, I'm told, but I didn't find that I needed it. It actually balanced just about perfectly with the heavy contour barrel that I had on the rifle. And I don't know, it just, it really is seeming to be a pretty nice option. And it's also got an adjustable thumb shelf on it, which I really like. And sorry, pausing again, making sure I'm not going to get pulled over by this cop. I think I saw him soon enough. I was doing like 10 over and I was able to brake check and get down to an acceptable speed. So back to the Solace chassis, the adjustable thumb shelf is a nice touch. You can just move it around to get exactly the right feel that you want and get your 90 degree trigger press ironed out. That's nice. It does have full length ARCA rail along the bottom of the chassis, so pretty standard these days, but obviously allows you to take your ARCA mounted bipod and slide it anywhere you might like on there. You do have 8 different M-lock slots all the way down the length of the forend. And so you can add weights to that, like the MDT weights will go right in there, and various other weights. You can get weights from Aero Precision for those as well. But you can add weights so that you can fine tune kind of the balance of your rifle. Again, I didn't have to add anything to that. So, you know, I thought that was nice. You can add any kind of thing you might want. They also make an attachable night vision rail up front. So if you're running night vision type stuff, you can get your optics mount up there for night vision. The thing that I kind of really like, I really like aesthetically pleasing things. I like it to look good, right? I want when I look at it, I want it to go, oh yeah, that looks good. Like, I don't want to look at a thing and go, it's kind of ugly. Like, I want to enjoy what I'm doing and what I'm using, what I'm shooting. So what they did with this chassis is there's no sharp edges anywhere. They rounded, radiused, smoothed all the edges, all the cuts. Nothing is a sharp edge. I really dig that. It just adds a nice touch. It feels good in the hand. It looks good to the eye. Mine is painted or Cerakoted in a sniper gray. And it just looks really slick. And so that's a plus for me. It does have an oversized, textured, ambidextrous magazine release. Just a nice touch. It's low profile, but it's easy to grab, easy to grip. You can get your mags in and out with no real issues there, no concern. Does have a standard AR type hand grip, so you can change that out to any available hand grip. It doesn't use the beaver tail, the little curved beaver tail part. Not sure what type that's called, but anyway, you can change out your AR style hand grip to whatever your liking is. It does have 4 QD points up and down each side of the chassis, so total of 8 quick disconnect points for sling usage at various different configurations and ways. Kind of like that. I don't like saying all of the positives and never a negative, so the one downside that I've found so far to the chassis itself is the buttstock. It has a big, thick, rubberized buttstock. And for PRS type or any type of competition, I like a slick buttstock. I don't like the big rubbery things because we're not shooting rifles where we need all the padding to soak up recoil. A big, thick, you know, recoil pad can actually induce bounce into your system when that shot goes off. I don't like that. I like a slick or a firm, hard rear end. Oh yeah, I know. Anyway, I don't like that. That's a downside to me. Plus that sticky rubber, it gets snagged on your shirt, on your clothing. That's not ideal. So I don't really like that, but everything else is pretty solid, guys. I'm going to pause here for a moment, and when I come back, we're going to talk about the Area 419 scope mount with the diving board that I'm going to be using for the Vortex Impact 4000. Let me pause real quick. Okay, and I am back, and we're going to be talking about the Area 419 scope mount, the one-piece scope mount, and the diving board for it. And I will be mounting the Vortex Impact 4000 on there. The Impact 4000 came out a couple of weeks ago and was caused a pretty big stir in the industry, because what they did was they created a weapon-mounted laser rangefinder with ballistic solving built in, and weather and everything built in. And if you're not aware, that type of a device has been available to military and law enforcement applications and civilians for some years now. Wilcox makes them. They're extremely expensive. And they're like $10,000, $10,000 to $15,000 expensive when you started them. Unnecessarily expensive. With everything Wilcox, if you're into night vision and you use Wilcox mounts on your night vision, like a single night vision helmet mount from Wilcox will run you $700 to $800. It's excessive, you know. And these laser rangefinders, weapon mounted laser rangefinders, were no different. You know, in excess of $10,000 for something like that. Now, they are, or at least the thought was, oh, they're more robust. They're made for military applications, and I think they do have IR night vision type capability as well on some of those, whereas the Vortex does not have that particular function. But the Vortex, I'm told, is extremely durable. It is a slightly larger unit, so the military ones are a slightly smaller profile and getting smaller all the time with the addition of the Mars unit. If you're familiar with that one, that one's super tiny, lightweight, and man, that would have been my choice, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to drop the $10,000 on a unit like that. So for $2,000, you get a weapon-mounted laser rangefinder. But the big thing with these is you absolutely cannot have any movement in your mounting system at all, like none. It can't ever move. Otherwise, your zero on your laser is going to be off. There's just no other way around that or any other way to talk about that. The key feature to weapon-mounted laser rangefinders is the ability to keep the laser rangefinder perfectly zeroed. And if you can't keep it perfectly zeroed, then I don't know, like it's just not going to be trustworthy, because it has to be able to range the exact thing that you want it to range. It has to be kind of not collimated, but kind of like lined up with your rifle, between the laser rangefinder and the rifle out to distance, so that everything is working as it should and is solid and gives you accurate ranging at the various distances that you pointed at. Because you want to be able to put your crosshairs on whatever you want to aim at and then just reach up and press a button and have it give you an exact yardage. And so that's got to be exact. And the way you do that is by making sure that your mounting system on the rifle has no slop or play or movement in it whatsoever. And so the reason that I'm bringing up the Area 419 mount is because they have a really, really, you know, highly polished, machined set of a one-piece scope mount. And you just don't get any more precise than that. The tolerances are so tight and small, and it's for precision long range. And so everything that Area 419 does is high end, and it obviously commands a premium price, but I do believe that when you pay that, you're kind of, again, taking all of that question about potential error out. Like if something fails on my rifle, it's a very, 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 very slim chance that it's going to be that Area 419 mount. And now where it comes into play with the diving board, which is the piece that goes on the top of the scope rail that you then mount your Vortex Impact 4000 laser rangefinder to, The interface between that diving board mount and the scope rings is the key issue. And some are just basically flat. They just sit on a flat surface and you screw them in with two screws. But there's potentially play in that. So even things like spur mounts, for example, which have long been the gold standard, can potentially loosen up and cause some wobble or some error, because they will move if those bolts come loose. The way that the Area 4191 is built, it's just absolute impossibility for that to loosen up, because it's got these posts built into the mount, and then the diving board has holes, basically the female end on the diving board, and it's almost like a press fit. As you tighten it down, and they have very specific torque settings and a pattern of torquing it down, so that you make sure there is absolutely zero slop or play, like the tolerances are incredibly tight. And as long as you follow those instructions correctly, that diving board interface between the scope mount and the diving board will not be the problem. There's no way for it to be off. It is perfectly machined, tight tolerances. It is perfection, as close as you can get. And so I wanted to just make sure that I had that. And so Area 419 sent those over generously for me to be able to review, and I really appreciate those guys for doing that. So shout out to Area 419. Give those guys some love if you think about it, because high-end products, very, very quality made, and I think you guys probably love whatever you get from them. So I have yet to do this Vortex 4000 video. I've done a couple of little teasers on Instagram, but then right after that, the Garmin chronograph came out, and all hell broke loose in the industry. And I spent a couple of weeks doing Garmin chronograph videos, and now I'm going back to the Vortex 4000 and getting that busted out, taken care of. So coming soon is my Vortex 4000 video review, and I will be using the Area 419 mount and diving board and all that kind of stuff. So I'm probably going to do a quick video on how to mount a scope into that particular mount, and then attach the diving board as well, and attach the Vortex 4000. Maybe I'll do it all in one video, I'm not sure. But, you know, suffice to say, I have the things, and a video needs to be done, or multiple videos need to be done. So that's coming up. Guys, that's going to be it for today, I guess. Again, apologize for the road noise. I am on the highway in the car, just windshield time, trying to bust out a video for you guys. And so if you haven't already, please follow the podcast. Please check out the sponsor links, either through the website, or there's a link to the links in the description of every video we post on YouTube. And hit that subscribe button on YouTube if you haven't, guys. I'm on this push to 100,000 subscribers. I'm starting to kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel now as I'm approaching 64,000 subscribers. And it's kind of, if you've ever done a YouTube channel or know somebody who has, 100,000 is a massive milestone in YouTube channel stuff. And so I'm on a push for that. So help me out. So create an account if you don't have one, and subscribe, please. And that'll go a long way to helping me out. So thanks for listening, and stay tuned for another episode of the Precision Rifle Network podcast. Thanks.